Hello, hello. I'm just here. This is Tyrone Tate with the Watkins Award. I'm here with my co-host, Mr. J. Everett Pearsall. And today, today is Monday, February 15th. And in Atlanta, it seems like it's a little chilly down here. My co-host is up in Baltimore, Maryland. What's the weather like up there, Pearsall?
Oh, it's not chilly here. It's downright cold. Downright cold.
Well, you know, I'm a little jealous. You just had to go down into your basement and show your basement off to the listeners today. And certainly this is going to be an awesome day. One of the things that I've always had in the back of me that I never really talked about, I mean, I know it's Black History Month, and just wanted to let you know that I got Daniel Wilcox back there. I have Colin Kaepernick back there. And I have, of course, one of the first to ever come through the Watkins Award, Robert Tate's jersey back there, you know.
So I
got some exclusive jerseys behind me, and I got some boxing gloves back there as well. So just in case you start acting up, I'll bring those boxing gloves to Baltimore with me. So how you doing today, Pearsall?
Absolutely wonderful, and I am glad to be on the show from my home base here in Maryland. And the last couple of times I've been on the road, and now I'm comfortably sitting in my own chair, and I am joining you from my studio and the point with which I hope to have most of my podcasts. I'm great, man. I can't, you know, warm is about your attitude. The temperature is about where you are inside. So, you know, the cold weather is something that I'm used to this time of the year. And I'm just happy to be here on the show with you and excited.
Well, let's do a little bit of maintenance here because, you know, I meet people in the street all the time. I'm constantly on the phone. And one of the things they always ask, and I know a lot of our listeners do know this, but the National Alliance of African-American Athletes is an organization. And we just happen to have an award that was named after the founder, Franklin D. Watkins. And we call it appropriately the Watkins Award. Now, the Watkins Award is for the top African-American scholar athlete who just happens to be a senior in high school. Now, I want to make sure you know this, not juniors, not sophomores, not freshmen. It's a senior in high school. Now, everyone has this complex about, is this award just for football players? And you and I have this conversation all the time. This award is for football, baseball, and basketball. Now, I just want the listeners to know, the audience, that some are watching us, that we don't purposely go out looking for football players. We're looking for athletes that play in those three sports. Now, there have been several who didn't choose football as the primary sport. Who were those two individuals, the honorees, who didn't choose football as their primary sport, Everett?
So when you say football is a primary sport, it's funny that you say that. And I'm always expounding on some of the questions and then I get back to your answer to be more poignant. But I just talked to Dominic Sims yesterday, and he's one of our guys from the year 2000. Mm-hmm. And I really didn't even know it. I knew that he was one of the top athletes in the country at the time, certainly a state champion in football. But it was just now 20 years later, he tells me that he was one of the premier power forwards in the country, where he won a state championship, and he was a track star. And so, you know, this guy was all around a great athlete in many different sports. And even the guy that we're going to have on the show today was a state qualified champion in track. I don't know if he got the gold, but he went. And these guys are usually playing other sports other than football. But again, we're talking about scholar athletes. And so we've got a number. We've got Jason Capel. We've got Ronald Carey, which was more known for his ability to play basketball than football, be quite honest with you. We've got Shane Battier and many more. But these guys, for the most part, play many sports. Of course, we recognize them for what they play when they go on to college and, mm-hmm. and decide they want to concentrate on it. It's very difficult at the college level to play more than one sport. But in high school, when we are recognizing them after their junior year, going into their senior year, most of these guys are, you know, lettermen in more than one sport and well accomplished in more than one sport as well.
Well, you know, you speak of after leaving high school, they go to college, and it seems like they just find themselves playing one sport. So let's clear this up. We've had a couple of guys who have played two sports while in college. So expound on that, because I know one, the reason why he stopped playing two sports because he got injured playing basketball, and that was Zach Banner.
Correct.
And Zach Banner, I mean, awesome basketball player, awesome football player. But he chose football as his primary sport to play in college, and Zach got hurt. And let's make it clear, he was at a Power Five school. He, you know, he was out at USC, and Zach got injured his freshman year. And so he thought he would just leave it alone, and he would just focus on football. But we had someone else that played both football and baseball and started every game, whether he was pitching or he was in left field, right field, center field. He could play the entire baseball field. And you and I went down and saw him a couple of times. So what are your thoughts on him?
Who, Jameis? And so, again, I'll tell you a few more, and then I'll get back to Jameis Winston. You know, we have Ronald Curry, basketball and baseball. As you mentioned, Zach Banner, basketball and football. Mercedes Lewis, basketball and football. You know, Jameis Winston, as you mentioned, was one of the top pitchers in the country and one of the top football players in the country. And so this is just to name a few, but many of these guys have the ability and are offered scholarships in more than one sport. They just select the sport that they love the most and the one that they want to select, that they want to excel in. Now, I'll tell you this, and this is purely my opinion when it comes to playing two sports at the college level. When I played football in college, the demands on my time were enormous, but nowhere in comparison to the demands that it takes in order to excel and participate in a college sport today. And so the number of hours that they're asking you to practice, the number of hours that they're asking you to prepare, really puts you in a situation where when you talk about being a student athlete, you're more than an athlete than you are a student when you're doing two sports, especially. The other thing that you have to look at when you're playing two sports is that there's overlap. And so when you take a look at the different sports seasons, most times there's a time where one sport is ending, the other one is starting, and you're not able to properly prepare in order to be ready for a good, strong start of the season. Let me give you an example. I watched the career of Ronald Curry as he matriculated. And again, I'm giving you my opinion. When he got done with the football season and he started his basketball season, it really wasn't until they got into the March Madness that he seemed to hit his stride, because he was just finishing a bowl game. Then he got on the hard court, started playing basketball, and it takes a few weeks to kind of get into the basketball rhythm of things. And it wasn't until they got into sort of a Final Four, if they made it that far, that he would really be in basketball shape. It's my opinion, in order to completely excel, unless you're just an extremely talented individual at both and don't need that much of preparation, like a Deion Sanders, not that he didn't need it, but obviously he was so far head and shoulders above everyone, he was able to accomplish that, and how extraordinary it is. In order for you to prepare yourself to be the best at whatever it is that you love in the sport that you're dedicated to, the demands that are put upon you at the college level really force you at some point, whether it's your sophomore or your junior year, to make either a business and or a decision on how you're going to really use your time best and get the best out of your time in a sport that you sort of concentrate on one. And again, this is not a model. This is not a rule. This is not a law. This is purely my opinion. But in order for you to be the best at any one sport in college, really, it entails you really putting your best foot forward and having a regimen around the clock, around the year to that sport. It's just, again, the Pearsall opinion.
Well, I mean, hey, That's a great opinion. And, you know, let's talk about the Alliance real quick. Then we're going to step back into that sport, that dual sport, because we got an individual I want to highlight what he was able to accomplish while he still was academic All-American. But let's talk about the Alliance. You know, the Alliance is a 501c3. It's a nonprofit. And the Alliance and its the vision of Mr. Franklin D. Wallace, when you met him, I mean, certainly quickly, what was the vision that you and him talked about for the Alliance?
Now, I'll say that there are eight of us who are still living, alive, and kicking, some still involved and some not. But when the eight of us sat together, Franklin D. Watkins being one of them, and we talked about how to be as impactful as we possibly could, we recognized that inner city disenfranchised youth look up to sports. They try to pattern themselves after sports. They try to do whatever they can to get that bag or that money to pull them out of the situation that they're in now, in order to be, in their eyes, more successful from a monetary perspective or do more for their family. Mr. Watkins, if you will, being a person who is senior to me and a mentor to most, is a person that gave back to the community. And so, you know, what he was able to give us as a group of folks who were trying to start an organization to be impactful was the opinion of a person who was a God-fearing man, a family man with a wife and two sons. He was a coach, a mentor, a counselor, a father figure to hundreds of kids who he had come in contact with. And so we recognized what it took from a hands-on perspective as an organization to build something to be impactful into the community, and the passion that we needed to have around uplifting that community. And so everything that we did, everything we talked about, everything that we focused on, in some way, shape, or form, had to come back to how this function was going to help a kid. And so, you know, that was something that he continued to harp on us, and it resonated. And even in his passing, we continue to focus on, even when we do a Watkins Award weekend, whatever city that we might do it in, where we'll be in D.C. next year, we have a teen summit. We have a football camp. We go visit schools. No matter what we do, there is always a component that goes back to giving to the community and uplifting youth. And that comes from Franklin D. Watkins.
Man, that's powerful. And we've talked about these things often. And I realize, Everett, that you have been passionate about this ever since you got started with it. But I go back to the fact that Mr. Watkins was nothing but a community man. And he wanted to impact his community. That was the original idea, impact my community. And then you and some others came along and said, well, wait a minute. We can make this a national award. And in making this a national award, we're going to identify the best scholar athletes in the country. Now, a lot of people got things to say about the athlete. And you just talked about how complicated it is to be an athlete and also be a student because of the overlap in the play. But we have a young man who came through our program. Most people have no idea that he was an academic All-American. He was 4.1, 4.2 coming out of high school. He's only a couple of minutes from the University of Alabama. The only reason he didn't go to Alabama was because they wouldn't let him play baseball and football. And let's just let it be known, because most people always say, well, wait a minute, I didn't know that. This same young man turned down a scholarship at Stanford, all because they wouldn't let him play baseball and football. And so he goes down to Florida State, plays both sports, never misses a game in either one of the sports. And this guy is still an academic All-American coming out of college, and he wins a national championship. Talk about him for a second.
You left the most important thing off. You know, when we talk about Mr. Jameis Winston, we talk about the fact that he has a national championship. We talk about the fact that, you know, he's our first and only Heisman Trophy winner. We talk about all these accolades, that he has a 98-mile-an-hour fastball. But the thing that makes me so much more proud of Jameis is that, you know, he decided that the moment he decided that it was a possibility that he could leave early from college, he turned up the heat in the classroom. And people don't know that he graduated from high school with a 4.4, 4.5 grade point average. But more importantly, he decided to make sure that he turned up the heat in the classroom and graduate early from college, along with his opportunity to leave early for the NFL. And so that's the thing that makes me most proud of him, is the fact that the value that he placed on education, how intelligent he is, and his family support around him, and how important it was for him, you know, to graduate and to be that example, because he is out there continuously in the community, you know, talking to kids, uplifting kids, and trying to give back as much as he possibly can. And, you know, Jameis really is a great example of what the Watkins Award is all about. And again, you know, everyone talks about all the things that he does on the field, on the baseball field, on the baseball diamond, if you will, and on the football field, and his, you know, accolades as a passer and all the awards that he's won, because he's won every one of them when it comes to the quarterback position in college. But again, you know, my most proud moment is when, you know, he turned up the heat in the classroom and did what he had to do. And, you know, I love him dearly.
Well, let's make it clear. Not only did he turn the heat up in the classroom, but what type of classrooms he was going in and out of. He just take the easy route. And Jameis wanted to be a podiatrist. May still go and be a podiatrist. But what was Jameis' major, Peter?
And so, you know, he wanted, as you just mentioned, you already called it out. You know, he actually was intrigued with the medical field, and maintained his interest in the medical field, with the idea that, you know, when football is over, that he would, you know, pick up the torch and follow through with his interest to be a podiatrist. And so, as you mentioned, you know, he didn't take the easy way out. He didn't pick an easy major. He didn't go to college thinking, you know, how can I just do enough to play football and play baseball, you know, while I play two sports, which is so demanding of my time, and take the easy major. You know, he stuck with his guns and pursued his top interest, which was to be a podiatrist. Again, another thing that you could put in terms of a feather in his hat. But again, if there's anyone that can do that, I guarantee you it's Jameis Winston.
You know, again, I just wanted to make sure that our audience knows that when we say that we are passing this award on to the top African-American high school scholar athletes, that we have to give them examples. And these young men are not just in the classroom, they're nerdy, they don't do anything. You know, there was one particular one that you know, he made me so proud when I saw him. And, you know, of course, I talk about, I got Colin Kaepernick's jersey behind me, but there was a young man that kneeled along with him, and he's a Watkins man. He was an honoree as well, 2010, and out of Louisiana, he was down there at LSU. Talk a little bit about him, Everett. I mean, come on, give me something.
Well, I'll tell you that the thing that sticks out to me when it comes to Eric Reed, which is the person with whom you're referencing, is the Reed family. And so I have to start from the top, just because how impressed I am with the Reverend Dr. Eric Reed Sr. When I had an opportunity to greet the family with regard to the Watkins Award back in 2009 and 2010, I presented the concept of what the Watkins Award was all about. I later found out that obviously his father was a reverend doctor, a scholar athlete in right of his own, with all of the track records for hurdling at LSU. He reared here from Maryland, but it then come to meet his mom. And his mom was also a participant in female football. So I said, wow, you know, what a lineage. Education, athletics, all the things that the Watkins Award is all about. And then I meet this young man, Eric Reed. And Eric steps to me, and I go to his high school game and get an opportunity to spend time with him. And, you know, he says, you know, I'm gonna go after this award, and I'm going to get it. And, you know, he looked at me in my eyes at the time, and he was, you know, 17, 18 years old, you know, early in his senior year. And he was purpose with making sure that, you know, I knew he was serious about it. He later went on to have a great career at LSU, first round draft pick coming out of LSU to the San Francisco 49ers. But one of the things that one of my board members and the chairman of the Watkins Award always talks about with regard to Eric Reed is that he rode along in, the city of Atlanta, and he looked up, and I think it was right before they were playing a bowl game, and they may have flashed it on the television or he saw it in person, but there was a billboard. And on that billboard, where people normally tout all of the athletic accomplishments of an individual that's playing for their team, who it looks like it's going to be one of their top athletes, on that billboard, it actually said what his major was and his GPA, which at the time I believe was a 3.6 GPA or something in that vicinity. And it touted him as an academic All-American. So here you have a potential first-round draft pick at LSU on a billboard in a major city, not for his athleticism, but for his scholastic aptitude. Let me tell you that his impact went one step further, in as much as when I went to Baton Rouge, Louisiana, to do his function for his family and his small member or team of friends that he wanted to celebrate with, his younger brother said to me, "I'm going to get that Watkins Award too." And he is one of only two families that have had two individual brothers from the same family be part of Watkins, and as much as Justin Reed now is in his third season with the Houston Texans as a safety as well. And so we talk about the impact that he made externally to everyone he came in contact with, but even his own family members, who oftentimes take you for granted, looked up to what he was able to accomplish as it relates to being a student athlete and went on to Stanford and did great things, but more importantly, looked at some of the example that Eric set before him and reached out and accomplished it, and now doing good things in his own right. And so I cover it from head to toe. I talk about his parents. I talk about the young man himself, and then the impact on his younger brother, well-rounded and obviously become very well-known for how he stands with relation to athleticism and its effect on the community and where we're at today in our community, and really, extremely mindful toward, you know, the kind of impact that he can have and should have on the community at large and what they represent. And obviously nailed next to Cap, as you talk about, and made a stand for all the things that we're viewing and have experienced as Black men in America. Great man, right. And Eric Reed, and done great things.
Well, that was certainly, I really appreciate that thorough understanding of the Eric Reed family, because I brought Eric Reed up because it was appropriate considering it's Black History Month. And we want people to know that these guys, these young men, are well-rounded. They understand the topics. They're willing to accept the causes and be a part. He knew that he was going to put himself out there, but we've gone full circle. And now you see the work that he put in with his teammate. Of course, they broke them up, made sure that the two of them couldn't stay together. But certainly I would have loved to see them be together longer. But thank you so much for that. You know, I'm inclined to just let people know that the Watkins Award is something that we do, and that we have people who help to sponsor the things that we do. You don't have to remember everything. You can go by the website at www.naaa.com. And you can get more information about the players. You can get more information about Everett Pearsall and myself. But some of the people who help us to do the work that we do is Jan Adams, JMASolutions.com. They are headquartered in D.C. They've been one of our sponsors, and they are a sponsor of the show today. JMA Solutions is an award-winning government consulting firm with over 12 years of experience delivering outstanding customer service. So, you know, JMA and Ms. Jan Adams, we're very, very happy to have them a part of the Watkins Award. But also we have ExoticCarSharing.com. Exotic Car Sharing by Curvy Road is a full-service car sharing company that has been in business for over 21 years. And so they do the car sharing that's like fractional ownership. So people like you, Mr. Pearsall, who like to ride in a Bentley, a Benz, Rolls Royce, Maserati, Lamborghini, you know, Exotic Car Sharing certainly can help you to satisfy your taste in cars. Because as we look around your room and all the awards and memorabilia, we know that it looks good when you get into that Bentley and just ride with the top down and let your hair just flow in the air. Well, that sounds like it's a break coming up. We're going to break for a second. We're going to allow listeners to listen to some good old music. And we'll be right back with our guest, Devere Ozy, from the Ohio State University. Unchanged, unfazed, and unwilling. It's a new day, new world, we all winning. I'm up late, up early, I gotta get it. Keep working, now we gotta make a million. Go get it, you got it, I see you. Go get it, you got it, I see you. Go get it, you got it, I see you. Go get it, you got it, I see you. Go get it, you got it, I see you. Go get it, you got it, I see you. I know you can do it. All you gotta do is put your mind to it.
Exotic Car Sharing by Curvy Road is a full-service car sharing company that has been in business for over 21 years. Based out of Palatine, Illinois, our company allows its members the ability to own fractional ownership of exotic cars at a fraction of the costs. Our share plans include reservations for weekend or weekly ride sharing. Our members get to choose from a Bentley one weekend to the McLaren 570S the next. No long paperwork, expensive maintenance, or expensive insurance requirements. Exotic Car Sharing has the fleet and capabilities to service all of our clients with quality luxury vehicles delivered at your doorstep. Register on our website at exoticcarsharing.com or call us at 888-264-3327.
Yeah, buddy. There we go, Mr. Pearsall. Mr. Pearsall, did you run out real quick and knock the snow off the cars? It's snowing up there in Baltimore.
Oh, no. The ice just melted. The ice just melted. So we're right there on the line, baby. Right on the line.
That's what I'm talking about. Well, our next guest, I mean, Devere Ozy. I mean, clearly, he needs no introduction because if you don't know him, I mean, clearly, you're not really a football fan, college football. But to say the least, the short introduction is Devere was an academic All-American coming out of high school. From high school, he went to, and you know, it's so appropriate, but man, they love it when they hear the word the Ohio State University. And from there, he was a third-round draft choice in the NFL, and he was a 2008. I'm cutting a couple of years off his age. 2008 honoree. But to say the least, he was a third-round draft choice in the NFL. He played a couple of years in the NFL and found himself in the CFL, came back to the NFL, and now he's back in the CFL. I mean, he just He loves this game called football. But with nothing else to say, DeVere, we call you Posey. Posey, I just want to say welcome to the Watkins Award show.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate that introduction, Tyrone. You are far too kind.
Well, I'm sure Mr. Pearsall got some kind words that he wants to lay on you as well. Mr. Pearsall.
Absolutely. One of the things that I'll don the audience with in terms of just the basic knowledge of who he is from his inception and the inception of our relationship is that when you apply for the Watkins Award, you write an essay. But through the process, in some cases, I get an opportunity to meet the entire family with which, and I call him P. Diddy, but in Posey's case, I was able to do so. And in getting to know his mom, talking about some of his life story, I'll say that he's been a fighter since inception. He was born with an autoimmune disease that put him in a position where he needed 24-hour care right out of the gate. And his mom and his family and his doctors continued to make sure that he had everything he needed to overcome. And so, again, when I talk about him as a fighter, I talk about from the very beginning. One of the things that we will go through as individuals, and we go through life, we will vacillate through the ups and downs. We'll have the obstacles. We'll have the good and the bad. But there's one thing that I know when I am in the presence of or in thought of Posey is that whatever that obstacle might be, he's going to come out on the other side better, bigger, stronger. And more importantly, he's going to be a guy that's going to teach others so that they can come over those obstacles even faster. The thing that you talked about when it comes to Posey is the fact that I attended his graduation from college, and so proudly so. But more importantly, when I talk to him, we rarely talk about sports. We talk about business. We talk about the community at large. We talk about society. We engage in such high intellectual conversation that really sports never even comes up. He is typical of what a Watkins guy is all about. Always trying to think forward and then bring it back to how we're going to give back to the community. So I am extremely proud to have my friend, my brother, my fellow Watkins man in the family, DeVere Posey on the line, a.k.a. P. Diddy.
Hey, Posey. Thanks for having me, E. Thanks for having me, y'all. Appreciate that. I might have some little monsters running in and out of here. It's around the dinner time, and I'm not too far from the kitchen, so I apologize in advance.
That's okay.
No, that's quite all right. I mean, that shows your growth spurt, man. I mean, watching you come through high school, college. I mean, come on, man. You know, you a grown man. You know.
Yeah. I got two sons running around here, man. So, you know, it's a big snowstorm. So, I mean, and also the coronavirus world. So everybody's at home. But normally we get out the house at nighttime a little bit, do, you know, activities. But everything's canceled because of the snow. But it's OK.
You mentioned you got two sons. So we have a lot of parents that are watching and listening to this show. What I want to know is when you were a kid and with you having two kids now, when did you discover that you had something special athletically, and how was that nurtured? I mean, you got some parents out here trying to figure this thing out, man. They don't know whether to start with their kid at 4 years old or 14 years old. Is it too late? You know, when did you identify, and what would you give parents as an idea of what they should be doing to nurture sports in their kids' mind?
Personally, for me, there's always been a love for sports. I come from a family, a long line of sports. So my uncles played at Michigan. He played in the NFL. My other uncle, you know, was a minor league baseball player, played for the Atlanta Braves for some time. So I always had the awareness of sports in my family. And I was able to see my cousins play. And, you know, when you go to those games in high school, those football games in particular, you know, there's the game and then there's the little kid game going off to the side, you know, and, you know, and the touch and the tackle football. And honestly, you know, I would play and give my heart to those games. And then as I got older, my brother was always 2 years older than me, but I would play against kids his age, and I would be getting off still, scoring, being able to affect the game, you know. And so in my mind, I always had that mindset. When I'm two grades back, I should dominate. So that's really when I knew I had something with a sports ability or had the ability to play. And my uncles always encouraged, you know, and they always saw our talent early too.
So were you self-motivated, or was someone pushing you?
I would call myself a self-motivated person. A lot of people don't know my recruiting story, but I didn't play varsity football until junior year. I had zero scholarships until December after my junior year of school. So I'm talking a whirlwind happened. Watkins, All-American, whoop, whoop, whoop. Everything happened back to back. And the reason was because I just was out of the loop. I played JV. I played freshman football. Basketball-wise, I played up. And I always kind of fancied myself a hooper. But, you know, as, you know, disagreements with your head coach happen more and more, you realize you really don't got a place on the hardwood at that high school. So I dove into football. And after my junior year, I had a big year. I was able to I take it back. Let me run it back. So I had a surgery right before my junior year. I had a hernia. I got the hernia removed and repaired. And then my athletic ability just took a leap. Like, I was able to run faster, jump higher. I was able to actually lift and do Olympic lifts in the weight room. And then I had a big year, made All-State, All-City. And then, boop, Ohio State pops up on my radar. And then that, and all of a sudden, I'm a national recruit, you know, going into my senior year. So, but going into that, a lot of people don't know that I had my highlight tape. I asked my high school coach, because he wasn't taking me seriously as a football product. He was actually throwing away my letters at the time. So I got all 10 tapes from all 10 games. My brother was in film school. He had a friend that was in Cincinnati. I went down to his studio, sat in there for 4 hours. We made my highlight tape. I went to Staples. I got 50 manila envelopes. I wrote a handwritten letter. I picked my 50 dream schools, and I found a recruiting coordinator, and I found their email address on Google. And I wrote this letter. I emailed them the letter, and I made a letter to the attention of them. And I took a shot in the dark. And out of all those 50 schools, I probably got about 30 of them to offer me. But that's how I popped up on the radar. No lie.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of young men out there going to you just knocked the stock up for Staples. There's going to be a bunch of them going to go to Staples tonight.
Well, I guess the reason I told that story is because you asked me if I was self-motivated, and I can't think of a better story that kind of outpictures that in my life, because that's the lengths I was willing to go to get to who I wanted to be and where I wanted to be.
So, okay, you finished high school. You then chosen the Ohio State University. I can't just not say the, because when you would be on TV and you would have to say, you know, where you went to school, you always say Devere Bosey, the Ohio State University.
Yes.
You make sure that was always there. But you get to that campus, you go down in a horse hit. What was it like going into that horse hit?
Oh, man, you know, it's a nostalgic feeling. You reflect back. I live in Columbus now, so I drive past the stadium, and it almost seems surreal to actually believe I got to play in there, you know, on Saturdays, and I got to actually prepare to be in that building. Columbus is a pretty flat town, and that stadium is just erected out of the ground. It's so tall, and it's just it reminds me of the Colosseum, you know, in Rome, just the structure, the rotunda, and it just has this lore about it. And the lore is, you know, a lot of great players have played there. A lot of great players have played in that stadium. So to be able to do that in my life as a bucket list, as an Ohio kid, as an Ohioan, it doesn't get better than that.
Well, you know, one of the things I want to go back to is when you first went in there and you played your first game, you're talking serious football fans? I mean, what was your heart doing? Was it racing? I mean, what was the feel?
I was just, I want to meet that energy. Like, I like to meet that type of energy. You know, if I'm in a room with a lot of smart people, I want to meet it with like, hey, give me 5 books to read. You know, like, that's just how I am. So that type of energy always brought out the best in me. So just being in there, you always, for me, I would always kind of, you know, take it easy a little bit. I wouldn't try and get too hyped in a hotel or get too hyped the night before because I was saving it because I knew as soon as that crowd noise went, I'm going to need that extra energy. You know, I'm going to need that burst. I'm going to need to be able to match that crowd. So it's a euphoric feeling.
Well, you know, you also experience, because this is something that schools talk about all the time, travel well. You would go out of town and play games.
Mm-hmm.
Ohio State fans travel well. I mean, you would take 30, 40,000 fans into somebody else's stadium.
Yes,
I mean,
yes.
What does that mean to you as a player? Going into someone else's stadium?
I didn't realize how well Ohio State traveled when I was in college, you know, not until I got to the Texans, you know, or, you know, you get to another NFL team or another organization and you realize like, dang, you don't get the support that you get at Ohio State. And not for nothing. I mean, hands down. I mean, I show up to the Texas organization, Tyrone, and eat, and like day one, I'm like, oh, Ohio State got more money than them. It's just like, you can see the difference in the facility. It's like, oh, the cold tubs and the hot tubs I was just using are like a little step down with the Texans, you know? So, I mean, you can put that into perspective that college organization grosses more than some NFL organizations, you know? It's kind of crazy.
Absolutely. I had the pleasure. I've been up there several times, but I had a pleasure of taking 45 football players up to Ohio State, and they got a tour of the campus. And, of course, we went in the facility, and, man, it was unbelievable. But, you know, I've had a chance to get around to a couple schools in Big Ten or SEC. But, Mr. Pearsall, tell us about one of your experiences going up to Ohio State watching Posey play.
Oh, tremendous. As he mentioned, when you walk into that stadium, and the first time that I had gone there really was back in 2001. It was my first time actually visiting, and they were playing against Penn State. When you go in there, and the energy that you feel in that stadium is like none other. And believe me, I've gone to probably 90% of the major college football stadiums in this country. And none really are above the energy and the fan base that they bring to the table. And to sit there and to get all the anxiety, me probably more than even he did, of watching him play and seeing him perform and be sitting next to his mom and his sister and his family and so forth. It was exciting. And really, I remember the games that I was able to see in terms of being a home game for him. If I could ask him a question, if you take a look at two of the monumental days or events in your, I'll say recent past, because you're still a young man. You take a look at draft day and you take a look at graduation from college. Talk about how significant they were, how they felt, and some of the lasting thoughts that you have about those two different instances that you were able to experience.
You know, the draft day was the icing on top of the cake, you know, and the cake was graduating. I mean, I talk about it open and candidly, but, you know, I was suspended, you know, most of my senior year due to NCAA infractions on image and likeness. I sold some things that I thought belonged to me. We got in trouble for image and likeness, a persona, which now 10 years later is being implemented and kids can capitalize with their image and likeness, a persona. But at that time, just going through that drama and sanctions and allegations and appeals, what was important for me to be able to withstand that storm was to graduate. It was the light at the end of the tunnel. I always kind of felt like I would have a pro career, but just putting in 4 years at the university, you know, research projects, starting a student organization, working at the president's office for student life, and being a football liaison, athletic liaison, you know, traveling to 40 counties in Ohio, you know, organizing program. It meant a lot to me to graduate. And to be honest, without that suspension, I wouldn't have been able to graduate because I was able to serve my internship time during that suspension. So like with anything, you know, man plans and God laughs, but by divine intervention, you know, chaos is divine order. I was able to graduate and I was still able to get drafted. So the icing on top of the cake, you know, just being able to live my dreams after, you know, some times where I didn't, you know, see it happening was, you know, I don't know which time, you know, stands out, you know, bigger than the other, but they're both equally important to me. And I also think me staying in the storm and me graduating allowed me to get drafted. It didn't show to the scouts or, you know, people who do these background checks that, you know, I run from things. I like to stay in it, you know, improve my situation and take my lumps and move forward. So I say they're hand in hand.
It is so funny how you sit there and just list the 7 or 8 things that you did off the field, like they're things that anyone did, right? I'm just sitting there listening to you ring off all these things you did. Yeah. And I'm like, most college people and kids who go through that experience, even though they play the game of sports and all mm-hmm. the time you have to take and dedicate yourself to it, you did all these other things off the field, which is what Watkins men do. And you had about 40 or 50 people at the graduation. So that was fun for me to be able to attend that. One of the things I also like to highlight is the fact that, you know, you have your own foundation in Cincinnati, Pocket Full of Posies, but more importantly, endeavors off the field. So as you still perform at the high level as a football mm-hmm. player, let's talk about some of the things that you're engaged in off the field, starting out with your own foundation, and then going into some of the business endeavors.
Yes. My foundation, Pocket Full of Posies, is based on creating healthy food model programs and nutritional education for people who are like myself growing up, kids who look like me. Eventually, we want to build a grocery store in a food desert. And on top of that, a park where our offices are at, where we can host seminars and educational classes and cooking classes and just give people the keys to being healthy. For me, we kind of fake, like the way that we do this, our nonprofit work is through programs. Each year we try to do, you know, I would say 3 to 6 programs, 2 of them being giveaways, 1 of them be a football camp, and 2 other ones being more educational. But just being able to transfer those programs and make an impact on people's life in the Columbus and Cincinnati area is what we like are set out to do. And on top of that, my dream with Pocket Full of Posies, you know, where I see it, you know, in 5 to 10 years is creating a curriculum that we can pass along and that, you know, it's like a plug and play type of thing. So hopefully, you know, we can get there. So that's my passion. I'll never get away from philanthropic work. I always keep that 501c3 just because it's important and it's a connector when it comes to business wise. It's a good way for me to always be sowing good seeds. You know, everybody needs good seeds. So I take passion in that. And on top of that, I've been able to do some things off the field with some, you know, in the health space and the tech space, just diving into the startup world with some ideas that I have there. And then also, you know, small, you know, family things like logistics and, you know, and investments and stuff like that, just to keep the, you know, the bills and the lights on. So, but my passion is in health. My passion is in helping people and helping them find their viable life through nutritional education and mental health as well, and nutrition, and also, you know, physical health. So just being able to marry the two holistically, the three holistically, you can kind of give people the tools and services and products that they need to live that viable life is what I hope I can accomplish.
That is so powerful.
Now, Posey, I want you to expound a little bit more because on your LinkedIn page, it talks about your tech mindset. So, yep. I mean, what specifically are you doing on the tech side? Because, I mean, people know you as this football player. Now they know about your nonprofit. But tell us a little bit more about your business acumen.
Well, I mean, I like it with anything. I'm learning. I take as many opportunities as just being a forever student. I mean, I'll tell you, I'm in D.C. like every other year doing an internship with the NFLPA. Just always just trying to connect and do as much as I can. But I'm not, you know, an expert at tech. I'm not an expert at health. I'm just a person who's had life experiences, and just being able to share them is what I'm all about. And so the way that I want to share them and channel that is through a connective application that basically is the essence of health and wellness and empowers people to create their viable life. And by doing this, it's an application that has social communities, products and services, diagnostic products and care plan teams that can take vanity genetic tests. So a look on the inside of your body from, you know, things your skin can handle to what medicines you can and not, you know, you can metabolize fast or slow. Just being able to take that look on the inside right here on your phone and give you the tools to control your health or, you know, fight your health or keep up with your health, you know, while you're on the road, you know, and just being able to find the products and services that you need and the people and information all in one, all at the palm of your hand, all in the palm of your hand at your fingertips is what I'm hoping to create. And if we can do this, I believe we can attribute to the one issue, well, two issues that we face in this world. One is living healthy is a challenge. And also just the obesity rates in the state of human health in a post-COVID world, just being able to digitize this will be truly helpful, you know, moving towards the future. And on top of that, I mean, healthcare apps, you know, are projected to be $60.5 billion companies, you know, and a billionaire industries, you know, in the next 5 years. So hopefully we can take a chunk of that and you know, use that capital to, you know, make an impact in the health world for sure.
So, Posey, you know, I know it's almost time for us to go, but yeah. What I want to do is to give our listeners an opportunity to reach out to you. I mean, let us know about your social networks and ways that they can touch you, because they want to get more of an understanding of how they may be able to help Pocketful of Posey.
For sure. Yeah. So I'll give you guys a few emails. Well, first off, my socials, you can find me at IG at dposey, D-P-O-S-E-Y underscore at IG, or you can find me at Twitter at D-P-O-8. So D-P-O-8 on Twitter. You can find me by my first and last name on LinkedIn. I prefer LinkedIn if it's a business inquiry. And then also, if you want to email me about questions with the application that I'm working on, you can email me at PIF. That's P as in Paul, I is in Igloo, T is in Tom, H is in Harry, research@gmail.com, pithresearch@gmail.com. And if you have some nutritional or foundational questions about, you know, starting a program or ways to get your 501c3, you can email me at my nonprofit email, and that's pocketfullofposies.org@gmail.com. So pocketfullofposies.org@gmail.com.
Man, it has been such an exciting time. It's time for us to get out of here.
Man, thanks for having me, guys.
It was a ball being with you. And then I got Mr. Yes, Pearsall here at the same time. Come on, Mr. Pearsall, give us a little dance.
Hey! Thanks for being, man. You're awesome.
Well, I thank you for your time, Posey. Certainly, I want anybody, if you didn't get that information, you can go by the Alliance website. That's www.naaa.com, and you can get all the information you want on Mr. Pearsall and myself and Mr. Posey as well. We're going to make sure we make him successful. That's our job. You know, we take a holistic approach around here.
Right.
You know, we want to make everybody successful. Come on, Mr. Pearsall, take us on out.
Thank you, Posey. Thank you, Mr. Tate. Everybody have a great week. We'll talk to you next Monday, 6 o'clock. I know you.
you gotta do is put your mind to it.